This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
The Flying Pork Apparel Company is an awfully long name to fit into a 15-second ad. We're most likely going to have to cut it short, but our designer tees and customer services are like way long on quality. Visit flyingporkapparel.com and shirt yourself, folks. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode 232, and today I have two special guests with me. Why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Patricia DeSalvo Vieira.
And I'm Mike Vieira.
And where would they know you guys from? Or might not know you guys yet, but will know you guys from soon.
We're from the Feature Film Tournament.
So Tournament is, one, it's a really fun movie. So let's just start there. And it is a movie about tabletop gaming, which I know a lot of you guys out there listening like. And I'm just going to read the summary if you guys are okay with that, your little like tagline. It's about a group of unlikely friends who gather at the local game shop for an epic battle, only to have a beautiful outsider turn everything upside down. Tournament captures the spirit, camaraderie, and smack talk of millions of players around the world. And I will say, part of my favorite thing about the movie was the smack talk. When Lung started going off in Chinese, that really cracked me up. I'm a big wrestling fan, and Asuka is a Japanese wrestler in WWE, and one of her kind of gimmicks lately is she smack talks in Japanese, and it's super fun. So that kind of like tapped into my like, oh, hey, this is awesome. Like, I'm all in.
Oh, good. Yeah, a lot of people love Lung.
Yeah, Lung is great. I liked all, like, I thought all the characters really brought something different, and we can go through that. But I do want to say, Ricardo, is it Shavara? Is that how you say his last name?
Shavira.
Yeah. I did not recognize him. Like, he's usually this big, like, macho guy. Like, I remembered from Desperate Housewives, and I loved, the first season of Santa Clarita. Well, I love the whole series of Santa Clarita Diet, especially when he played the sheriff living next door to Timothy Oliphant and, Drew Barrymore. And I did not recognize until the credits came up. And I'm just like, holy crap. Like, he just disappeared into the role of Steve. Yes, and I thought that was really fun. And being a dad of a mouthy preteen, I definitely identified with him.
Oh, awesome. I'm sure he'll love hearing that from you.
So why don't you guys talk a little bit about where you came up for the concept of the movie? Maybe some of... how you went about creating the game of Tournament, and then we can talk more about like the production and stuff like that.
Sure. Basically, the idea started kicking around after Mike would come home after going to the game shop to play Magic the Gathering on, you know, Friday Night Magic, and just the funny stories, or his friends would come over and they would play, and they were like speaking to me like a completely different language. And it was hilarious. And then also, you know, I would go pick them up or drop them off. And I was just always astounded at the diversity of just all different types of people, ages and backgrounds and races and just different looking types of people all just having fun, getting along, playing this game. And I thought that was really cool. And there's it just kind of built up all these interesting stories and along the way, and then Mike, you know, and I started talking about it.
We were sort of talking about it, and we happened to talk to another person who ended up becoming our co-writer. And Sam, we said, yeah, we really like to come up with this to really capture the game store experience and the relationships. And he says, oh, I'd love to help out on that. And basically, to make a long story short, over the course of about a year, we met all three of us together and had writing sessions, and you know, first solid draft was about a year into it.
And, nice.
That's how it all started.
Very cool. So is the gaming shop you guys shot in, is that your game shop, Mike, that you go to, or is that a different store?
It's called All Star Cards in Los Angeles. It's been around for something years. It was where I'd go, but, they don't open as frequently now. I mean, right now they're closed.
Yeah, nobody's open right now, Mike.
But before that, they were kind of going from multiple events to very very few events. But it is okay. Our local game shop that I knew the owner, and that's how he allowed us to shoot. We get the authentic. You feel like you're in a game shop because you are in a game shop.
Oh yeah. How long did it take you guys to come up with the game of tournament and the rules and the characters? And like, do you have like multiple sets of cards just hanging around your house?
So the interesting thing, people are saying, hey, where's the game? And we're like, well, it's not a game. We came up with the concept and the props just for using in the movie, because we didn't want to go get permission from Wizards of the Coast or some other, you know, actual game. So we came up with names that were not used by any card game. And then Patricia worked with the visual designers and artists to come up with the cards. So it's funny. It's like people look at the movie and they say, oh, where's your copy of the game? We're like, no, we created just enough to be on camera, on set, but we don't have a fully functioning built game.
Yet.
Yet being the operative term, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we have all the artwork. We have cards. And so when we go to like gaming conventions, we actually had some of the props from the movie that we hand out to people that come over and talk to us and buy a Blu-ray or a mat. So we do have some of the original stuff, and then we made some reprint cards to hand out to people.
We even did foils, gold foils.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
You guys should do like a Kickstarter or something and get the game out there.
We would love to do that. We'd love to do a Kickstarter for the next film and the game simultaneously. We're just trying to get the word out and get information about it, try to get, you know, some more people following us before we do something like that.
Are you going to do another tournament movie?
We'd like to, yeah.
I could see it
We're working on it. I mean, we're working on it. And we're also working on a series concept as well.
Oh, cool. I want to see, like, Aaron versus Paul, where it, like, just they got together and it ended badly, and now they're just bitter rivals. And she just takes him to the woodshed constantly, and she's like the Johnny Lawrence bully, and he has to overcome her. That would be hilarious.
Awkward.
Yeah, totally awkward. So I think one of the things that I really kind of hit like nostalgia for me was the Guild. Like it had a very very similar look and feel to the camaraderie amongst the group. You know, I don't know if you remember the Felicia Day little web series that they did, I think, like, you know, 15 years ago now at this point. Wow, I'm old. But it kind of had that, like, same feel to it about the way the players interacted with each other. Because while they were definitely a family, they were there to just bust each other's balls as much as possible.
Actually, I have never seen the show.
Okay.
I don't know if my co-writer had seen it. He may have.
People do talk about it a lot.
A lot of people do compare, you know, a lot to that show, which, you know, was wildly successful. So
I think it went for like 5 seasons or something like that, and, you know, had a music video. But it was just like, it didn't feel like, and I'm not saying like, oh, you guys ripped off the Guild. I mean, it just kind of had that like spirit of the show, you know, and the movie had that same spirit where it's like, this is an authentic group of people doing this particular activity. And like, you know, the Guild was like that with online gaming. So, I thought that was great. I thought the cast had amazing chemistry together. I really felt like I was watching people who had been friends and enemies for years, who had been playing games. So you guys did a really great job, like mixing like the cast. How did you go about finding your cast? Because I mean, a lot of them are largely unknown.
Yeah. Paul is my brother, Thomas. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty easy to find. And we did, you know, an actor's access, listing, breakdown services. And, we got about 1,000 submissions per character. So it was, so Thomas also helped us produce. And we also had Mariah, and mostly Mariah and Thomas and I just went through submissions and set up auditions and callbacks. And, you know, literally the people that we cast, it was as if, you know, Margot walked into the room and Stu walked into the room. And Lung, you know, it was just like when they walked into the room and started talking, it was like, oh, that's, you know, there's Adam, you know, there's Adam, with, you know, Arthur. And so it was really cool. They just kind of presented themselves, but it was pretty amazing the amount of talent and people that, you know, came across our desk, so to speak. And Los Angeles, you know, is a wonderful place to find talent. There's so many people there. So many talented people.
Yeah, so many. Yeah, I like I said, I really liked him. I your brother was great. I thought I was, because I was looking, I was like, where, what else is he in? Because I want to go watch something else with him, because his awkwardness came across as like really great, but it wasn't like the overwhelming attribute to his character. He just really was a like genuine nice guy, which you know, he, you know, spoiler, wins in the end, like, you know, at life, maybe not the game, but but yeah, the Ramin and Elliot, I thought were great together as well. And you know, we've all had friends who have really hot moms. So I felt for Ramin a lot, because I remember we used to give my one buddy just hell all the time. Anytime his mom would show up and be like, yeah, hey, when I'm 18, I'm going to ask your mom out. and you know, so he had to deal with that from everybody. You know, and I think one of the great things you guys did with the characters is in the first 30 to 40 seconds of meeting each one, like, you didn't have to slam over my head who they were in the group and who they were as a person. You just did a really good job, like, kind of telling a really quick story about, like, why they're there for the most part and what their role in this family is. And I really appreciate that.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's you know, it was definitely a challenge introducing everybody quickly, but then yet giving you some information about them, and then it all being in one room. That was definitely presented a challenge for sure.
Yeah. Trying to make it, you know, because with the confines of a three round tournament, you should have 8 to 10 people, and you know, eventually condensing maybe different personalities into one person, but then you want to make each person distinct, like all three kids, you don't want them all to be the same.
Right.
Or the adults. So that was a little bit of the challenge and tweaking and to make it interesting. And so you don't, again, get two people and you get them mixed up. Like, no, there's distinctly, you may not remember their name, but you remember their type.
Right. Right. They, yeah.
How they were.
Yeah. There were, I mean, like, cause both, Elliot and Ramin were both kind of like quiet and mousy, but in different ways. And, you know, when Katie walked in and just started going through Elliot's book and taking cards, it's like, okay, like she's super entitled and thinks she gets everything. And then when you meet Steve, her dad, it's like, okay, I get it now. Like there's no control here. And like I said, as the dad of a mouthy preteen, you know, that's a balance we all have to fight constantly. I do have a question about one of the subplots, because it was one of my favorite things, is the random Russians that kept walking into the store and delivering things. One of my favorite things was just the look of disdain that they gave the group as they had to like slink through to get back to Arthur to, you know, do their deal. I kind of felt like maybe Arthur's like running some sort of like hitman shop, and they're just coming in and like showing, hey, this is my proof. Okay, here's your money. Let's go. I like how they all thought like, oh, he's getting like Russian knockoff cards or, you know, Russian specialty cards and things like that. Where did that come from? And did you just tell those guys like, hey, just go in and like act like you would act, with a bunch of people who you kind of already despise just based on appearance?
Well, you know, we just kind of would joke about how game shops stayed open in general, over the years, and, you know, the struggle, and obviously we, have sympathized with different game shop owners that we, you know, we love, you know, that we've met along the way. And, you know, a lot of them have side businesses, but most people don't know what they are. So we just kind of joked about the different rumors and things that we've heard other gamers say about different game shop owners. You know, oh, they must do this or they must do that, or, oh, maybe it's shady. And so we just kind of wanted to play on, you know, also the fact that game shops a lot of times have to have, you know, people that do other things to make money because they struggle. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're there because they love it and want to, you know, have that for the community. I don't know if you want to add to that. So we just had fun making up silly scenarios. And, you know, Arthur is, his background is that he's like former special ops and, you know, was in Vietnam, and that's how he has all these connections, but he's really not doing anything shady, but he's very private, and he has all these international contacts because of his, you know, former military background, et cetera.
So yeah.
It's funny. I think the first draft of the script, everybody wanted more Arthur.
Yeah.
More like, but he's just kind of like the guy who runs the shop, you know, it's really the characters. So he actually, between the first draft and, you know, within 5 months when we started shooting, he developed, there was more background and more character to him. So those two, I don't remember if he was in the first draft, those two guys coming in, or if those are something we added to point to there's more complexity to the game shop owner. So it's funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, because he just kept coming and going, and like he'd set his pairings and then disappear, and they'd have to yell back at who won, and he's like, oh, all right, whatever. Like, you know, I've got more important stuff to do. You know, I'm playing Animal Crossing. Leave me alone. But yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Patricia. You were about to say something.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. He was a lot of fun. It was a fun character. And then, you know, Adam, who plays Arthur, just owned it. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
Very cool. Okay, so this is your first feature.
Yes.
Was it, did you wake up every morning and like, I'm living my dream? Or did you wake up every morning and be like, don't screw this up? Or was it somewhere in the middle?
So I'd have to say, going into pre-production, it was definitely, you know, my dream is coming true. This is amazing. I wish, you know, here and there, like, oh, I wish we had money for this, or, oh, we lost this person, or we lost that because we didn't have the funding, you know, scrambling for funding, you know, all the non-fun parts of filmmaking. It was definitely filmmaking, film business, everything, you know, learned by fire, serious on-the-job training. Shooting was every time the camera rolled and I was looking at and listening to the video, you know, in the video village, looking at the monitors, I was in heaven. That was amazing. The actors just, performances were gold, and I didn't have to do too much tweaking, because I, you know, the time I got to spend with them prior and the amount of time and work that they put into their characters prior to showing up on set, they were just amazing. It was, that was a dream come true.
Awesome.
The technical side of getting things done, that was an extreme challenge. The space was extremely small. We had a lot of lighting challenges. And then, you know, just fun little things like the base camp bathroom, you know, breaking through. And yeah, you just, the non-creative stuff, the producing side just is like, meh. But yeah, that working with some of my team and the actors was just a dream. And I do hope to be able to revive some of the characters for sure, and you know, do other projects.
And then you really loved the post-production.
Oh, post-production awesome too. I mean, my team, I'd love to just continue to work with over and over again. It was magical seeing it all come together because so many people didn't understand my vision. I mean, you know, including, you know, like telling the actors to sit by themselves in the room and talk directly to the camera. I mean, they were just like, what is going on? You know, and then the transitions to all the fantasy sequences, you know, they didn't like fully get. So it was just really cool when the visual effects started coming together and, you know, actually it all matched up that, you know, oh, this did work.
Yeah, the interstitials there were a lot of fun with the samurai and the cowboy and the boxing into the arm wrestling. That was just, I don't know. I enjoy that kind of like whimsy and sort of thing. So that's really cool.
Thanks.
Did you do a lot of rehearsals to get them to get like the verbiage down and kind of like the motion of like, you know, like it's not like you're playing like poker or something. Like there's a very deliberate way you have to lay, like you lay down your cards and like kind of present like, yeah, you think I've got you, but no, bam, two damage, you're done. Did you go through rehearsals? Did you when you were casting, did you try and get people who had some sort of like tabletop gaming background?
No, the only person that had played before was Thomas, and that was like, you know, because he used to play like Pokemon growing up, and then Mike and Thomas played together, and but basically we just had people over.
Yeah, once we had everybody selected, we had a formal read through, and after we did the read through, we had like some food, and we basically had like three or four of my friends that played. We all sat across the table and like, literally walked through basic how to play Magic the Gathering, what cool. You do, where you put your stuff and moving, so that they had that kind of sense of what was going on. And some of them actually after that went to different game shops and they would watch other people play and see how they were doing things, ask questions. So
yeah, were so lucky with our cast. I mean, they were so, I guess, just really excited. So they did their homework and they totally rocked it.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, cause they all felt definitely very believable, like, you know, and, you know, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. Like you didn't just cast like super pretty people to play like gaming and be like, yeah, right. That guy's never going into a game shop. Like they're all like, you know, actors and actresses. So they're handsome and beautiful and everything, but like they felt like they belong there. And, you know, I think I liked the accoutrement they all came with. Like Margot had her thing with her necklace and drinking the Coke before she could do anything. You know, the flaming hot Cheetos, you know, that Stu had and, you know, Lung's Chinese snacks that he didn't want to share with anybody. you know, but it was fun just kind of watching like each of them. The soda machine was also a great like gag. Who came up with that? And you know, like, did you tell them like which ones were going to be in which, or did you leave it to a surprise to the cast when they were getting it to let them figure out that game?
Well, you know, what's funny is it was actually that it was based when we were writing that. I remember it was based on the fact, I think, that the owner of the store had accidentally put the wrong ones in. So it was just based on that happened. And we thought it was kind of funny. You know, so they knew that it was in the script, but yeah, it's funny because as we travel around the country, like every store has a story almost exactly like this, like where they actually did it or they put it in wrong in the register. So they'd get a receipt back and they bought a Pepsi and it said something else. Or, I mean, so we hear the story. It's funny. We thought it was very localized. Maybe it's with one store or LA, but you get common, like, again, like, just like you were mentioning before, the kid with the quote unquote hot mom coming in almost every store, like, oh, we have one of those. So all these things that we thought were almost particular to a particular store, they're not. It's like almost everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere has a similar story.
More universal.
Yeah, more universal than we thought it would be.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, so when I'm just trying to think of like again the right way to word some of this stuff. When it came to picking your location, you obviously went with the like an existing gaming store. Did you at any point ever think of like, hey, let's put this in like a little bigger room so we have more room to move around the tables and get different kind of shots and pickups? Or was it, we want to keep this like tight and confined, like this is a card store and this tournament is like a special thing that happens and you know, disrupts the normal flow of business? Or was it something completely different?
I mean, the location that we chose, we were looking for a place that had a lot of production design built in, so we wouldn't have the expense of that.
Yeah.
And then
you get authenticity too.
It's authentic. I would have loved a larger space, but the owner of All Star Cards was so supportive and gracious that you know, he gave us an offer that it didn't make sense for us to go anywhere else.
Okay.
So it was a blessing, but then as a filmmaker, you know, the technical, you know, challenges of getting camera angles did become very challenging. But at the same time, the close quarters and the tightness and the squeezing by each other to get to go pay something or to go to the bathroom or whatever, I mean, that's all authentic to that space, which makes it kind of funny in of itself. So it actually worked, despite the challenge of, you know, getting the camera where I wanted it, sometimes. But yeah, it kind of came out of necessity, but at the same time, I absolutely loved how it looked, to capture that authentic collectible card shop with these quirky people and the quirky things and everything about it.
You just can't, how hard would it be to build just 25 years of
dust
and it's just, you know, you can't have a production designer perfectly put stuff that's been, you know,
right
piled up for 25 years. So
I think the space added to the intimacy of everything as well. And I was just curious if you had thought about it, like doing like a bigger room where like maybe there would be like three or four tables and multiple games going on at once. But no, I mean, I think that's great. It added to the intimacy. And how seasoned was your crew? You know, being a first time feature director, like did you go with like some, like has your cinematographer been doing it for a long time? Or, you know, did you go with like relatively a relatively new crew like yourself, to so you could all like kind of learn and succeed all at the same time?
I would say they're pretty new filmmakers, you know, maybe done a couple features here and there. So yeah, it was definitely, we had some challenges because of, you know, lack of experience. That's for sure. But I think, you know, overall we overcame. So, but definitely, I think every filmmaker wishes they had a bigger budget and could work with, you know, more experienced people. But I think we figured it out. So,
Were there any actors, like, and you don't have to name names or anything, but were there actors that you tried to get that were maybe like a name that like just didn't work out? Or did you intentionally go with, you know, the actors who had kind of a more shallow IMDb?
Well, I mean, our budget dictated who, you know, basically what we could do, in terms of, you know, day rates and things like that. So, we actually didn't get our SAG approval until like the Friday before we started shooting. So we weren't allowed to, actually say we were SAG. We'd had to post everything as non-union, but in the notes in the very top, so we are trying to go SAG.
Yeah.
So that's kind of part of it. And then once we knew for sure we were doing SAG, and once I knew I could possibly raise for more money, that's when we went after Ricardo.
Okay.
So then we got him like that Wednesday before the Monday we started shooting.
We met him for the first time the weekend before we started shooting. Yeah,
that was so crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what's it like having to get that SAG approval, I guess? Is that the proper term? I mean, I know it's like just, there's plenty of
it's a lot of forms.
Yeah. A lot of forms.
A lot of paperwork, and you put up a lot of money and you hire a payroll company. But if you want to get SAG actors, you have to do it. Mm-hmm. So Patricia was basically the lead producer all the way through about 2 weeks before we started. Okay. Then about 2 weeks before, I helped and jumped in, took over like lead producer, line producer, so she could focus almost exclusively on directing. So that's kind of how we broke it. She's been in charge of the project the whole time, but we didn't want her to be worrying about lunches, you know, when they're shooting. So I would take care of all the you know, on set kind of stuff and just basically tell her how much time we had between breaks and here's what you need to do. And she'd work with her AD and just get the shots done. And I'd work with our other, the PAs and stuff to make sure, again, food was there. I mean, we had, it looks like a very small group, but I think a minimum of 30 people a day up to almost 50 people a day.
Oh, wow.
Between crew and cast.
Yeah.
And then the, one good thing is a base camp was across the street in a little bakery shop, little cupcake shop. But all the actors were usually, if they're not on camera, they're all sitting there and all hanging out together.
That's good.
At first we thought it was kind of, we'd be a pain, but it actually worked really well because they got to become friends, and then they'd be like, "Oh, okay, let's go on the set now." And it was happy accidents, but those last few days right before we started was crazy because the Friday we started Monday, the Friday before we had to go pick up our permit, permit to shoot. We got our SAG approval that day. We lost our original base camp, which is supposed to be next door. The second AD and I had to go walking the neighborhood to find a new base camp.
And parking.
We found the new base camp. We lost all 40s parking spots. We had to go get new parking spots. Wow. And and there wasn't sufficient like toilet things available. So that weekend, our second AD was calling around, and we got a fancy little event porta potty with it's flushing fancy. Toilets and stuff.
Okay.
Put behind the building. So within those 3 days, it was like amazing what we got done.
So was it like one of those?
She didn't know about any about this until we actually like started.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh yeah, by the way, she's like, oh, this is cool. Like, oh yeah. And then we hooked this up on Friday.
So. Nice. Your luxury toilets, was that like a trailer that pulls up and like, you know, it's like they walk up the steps, like you would have it like a big concert or festival or state fair. Yeah.
The lights and running water because they have the tanks.
Yeah, nicer than most people's bathrooms.
Well, it is LA, so you know they probably got some pretty fancy mobile services for the film industry, I imagine. Very fun. So the restaurant next door was a combination of Italian and Thai.
Yes.
You caught that.
I was sitting there and I heard him order spaghetti and meatballs, and then Raheem ordered pad thai, and I was like, God, I hope they don't mix those up. So I can't imagine like I'll have pad thai, but can I have some meatballs thrown in there, please? Like, oh. But yeah, no, I thought like you guys just did those little like quirks and things like that, and why weren't they allowed to play in iTai?
Just because the idea being, well, you don't want people just playing games and taking up space long periods of time, you know.
So they kind of had it, you know, like even at that moment, they were going to be playing quickly.
Yeah.
They kind of had, you know, we're just tired of people coming and sitting and playing and not ordering or taking too long, things like that. So they have a history there.
Okay. Because I thought it was funny because they had ordered and she still kicked them out. And it's like, well, like you went and put their food in. You put their order in. Like now they've started to make it. And what do you do now? So that was – it was just like, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense why Candace is kicking them out. I also thought it was really funny when they were teasing Elliot about getting Candace's phone number because I expected someone much closer in age to him not to be like, you know – not like, you know, older, but like, you know, a woman who's obviously in her 20s, and he was like, just has a total crush on her. I was, you know, the please, please, like how he kept yelling it very aggressively, and he was trying to be polite, and it was just a cool little moment.
Yeah. And then we kept it in there, but Christian, who played Elliot, you know, added that you know, he improvised the line, I was totally gonna right swipe her. We just added that, and he kept it because it's hilarious, you know. It's just so innocent, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had no idea what that meant, but like,
right.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it was really cute.
So what's, I guess, what's next for you guys? Like, you've alluded to maybe doing a revisiting the tournament verse. Wait, before that, you guys took this to Gen Con, right?
Like awesome.
You took this movie to Gen Con, correct?
Yes.
And did
Gen Con and Origins, yeah.
Did it just go over like gangbusters at both places?
It did. Like, it was amazing. And it's one of those things, like highlights in your life that you're like, I don't know if I'll ever get to experience that ever again. Like, mm-hmm. That's how awesome it was, you know?
We took it for like a preview to Gen Con the first year.
And nobody knew who we were.
And nobody knew who we were, but they loved it. And then the second year we went back it was done. It was packed. There were people like talking amongst themselves, like, oh, that's you, that's you. And people came from the first time just specifically to come see the screening.
Oh, wow.
And it was just like this chaos, but yet fun party going on all during the screening where you could hear the movie, but you could hear all the little conversation and groups going on at the same time, all focused on the movie. And then we have this big group shot of everybody afterwards yelling, screaming about it. You're like, that's pretty cool.
And then, so we got Best Gamer film there. Mm-hmm. And then which we're very honored to get that at a place like Gen Con. And then we got Best Feature and then the Audience Award at Origins, which again is, you know, was amazing. I mean, it's our peeps. I mean, it's huge gaming conventions and people who love games. And if we're making people happy that love to play games, and we made a movie about people who love to play games, it's like, it's just amazing. So, I mean, I know it's not for everybody, but those two places where dreams come true due to show there was, you know, and of course terrifying. You're like, how are they going to respond? Are they going to like it? You know?
Yeah. It could have gone very badly. They all be throwing their dice at you and like,
you just don't know, you know? And so it was incredible.
Yeah. One of the teams I worked with in the past, like they were all like big, just, it didn't matter what the game was. They were just tabletop gamers. And they were constantly like scouring like Kickstarter for games and going to Gen Con and like getting the games and all the expansions. And like, you know, and I was looking at the money they were spending. I was like, wow, I need to invent a card game that people like, because these people spend a lot of money. And you did that with Steve with the gambling addict side of give me three packs.
Yep.
So, okay.
It's incredible. And it's funny some folks in Hollywood are like, yeah, we just don't get who your audience is. You know, they want a clearly defined audience. And I don't even know what to say to them because I've already given them like the whole pitch, you know, and then, you know, you tell them how many people play, you know, tabletop games and show, and you narrow it down to trading card games and, you know, the list goes on about all, you know, and then you show them Facebook and Instagram data as to who your followers are and, you know, and ads and, you know, all of that. Right. And they're just like, they just don't get it. They don't get gaming, gamers, gamer movies, unless you're, you know, a big multi-million-dollar, you know, thing. It's been very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these people spend money.
So
the beauty of it is, you know, you go to different things. Like we go to the gaming conventions or we go to Star City Games, we do Magic conventions, and we're talking to gamers like we think our target audience. But then we've also had screenings where there's literally nobody that plays tabletop games or trading card games in the audience. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, how are they going to react to it? And they react very favorably, just a straight comedy, like a slice of life, looking at the group dynamics. I mean, some people say, oh, it's like a modern day Breakfast Club. But it's great because, I mean, that was one of the reasons why there was two writers and me involved was to get authentic movie, but not be too over the head of people who didn't play. So
right.
Patricia brought in that aspect of, it's gotta be funny to someone who doesn't even know anything about gaming. And then, you know, we had the other co-writer who was like a hardcore gamer. Mm-hmm. And so there was that tension, which we think came out great on the screen to satisfy both audiences, where, you know, we have people that watch the movie at home, like it's a date night, one person's a gamer, one person's not, and they both can enjoy it. So we're pleasantly surprised by the crossover.
Yeah, I definitely would have gone to see this in the theater. Like after watching the trailer, like I'd be like, oh yeah, I definitely, because like that, like you said, that slice of life, that's the type of movie I really, really get into. Yeah, it's just, I think kind of Hollywood's a little bit broken and like kind of everything being shut down. I've been preaching for years that they need to run movies like the video game industry and like do beta tests and like not just focus on people and like test audiences in New York or LA, but like go to Oklahoma and like a little town or like Ohio or wherever and like do some of these just like, hey, let's do a quick screening. We're going to invite 50 people. It's not just going to be people who are bloggers. We're just going to like go to like the local shops and be like, hey, let's put out tickets and like let them watch the movie and then do a Q&A afterwards. And, you know, or even parts of the movie and just kind of like test and make sure it's going to do well, because like the coasts aren't what make movies popular. It's the rest of the country that makes movies popular. And like, this is one where it's like, I had no idea you were in LA. It could have been any game shop in America. And that was the beauty of it. It wasn't, you know, like a lot of movies and TV shows, it's just always Burbank. It's always Burbank, California. And it's like, eh, great. Show me something else. and like, you know, so now they're like, okay, it's always New Orleans or it's always Chicago. But, you know, I appreciated that in the movie, that it was is like, I mean, this movie's timeless. Like, you know, like, I'm going to look at this movie in 10 years and be like, would cell phones have made this movie better, or whatever the version of cell phones are in 10 years? and it's going to be like, no, like, because it didn't matter. It's about a group of people interacting, you know, competing with one another, but at the same time, like, have a genuine love for each other.
Oh, yeah. 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 We actually got some, a couple people commented that we didn't do like the big street point of view, you know, with like the establishing shots and, you know, all this stereotypical, you know, cookie cutter mm-hmm. Hollywood things. And I was like, well, I did think about it. But I did want it to feel like it could have been anywhere, mm-hmm. like anybody's game shop, anybody's place that they go to and play with their friends. And so that's why we kept it the way we did. And even when you do see them outside briefly, we kept it tight mm-hmm. because I didn't want it to be like, oh, this is, you know, a street in LA. You know?
Yeah. We never saw the storefront really. I mean, just a little bit of it. And I think opening with Margo and Stu was great because they weren't the main characters, but they were still important. But like, you're led to believe, like, okay, like, why am I going to care about these two as the main characters? And like, it's not until, you know, Paul looks in the window and it's like, oh, this is our, you know, quote unquote hero. Like, and then when he walks in and Katie's like, you know, that's a glass door. I was like, oh my God, that is just the funniest thing and something I would totally say. So yeah. And then when Erin showed up, I think like it was really funny because she was a complete outsider, and in the way that, you know, they welcomed her, like, you know, except for Wyatt. That's like the general sense you get at these kind of things. Like, you know, I'm a big comic book collector, and, you know, I'm always excited when people come into the comic book store for the first time, or, you know, I like to just bring people to the comic book store. It's like, hey, I gotta go run an errand, and like, you know, like, next thing my friends know is like, what am I doing in a comic book store? And then like, here, you need to read this, this, and this, and this, and they walk out having spent like $200. Nice. And so yeah, my local comic book show. Shop owner loves it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'll volunteer on like free comic book day. And yeah. Like, I always send people out with like different trades. And it's like, I'm always like, hey, stock up on this one, and this one for adults, and this one, and this one, and this one for kids. I'm going to move all of them for you. So,
we had a lot of closet, big time comic book collectors in our cast and crew that, you know, slowly shared, you know, that with us at various times, because I guess they felt like, you know, most people would make fun of them, but they felt safe around us, you know. Like, yeah, you can tell us that you collect stuff like that. We're, you know, that's normal to
they were
us.
They were in a safe space.
Yes, they were.
Okay, so what's next? Are you gonna do more projects? Are you gonna do another feature? You know, like,
well,
what do you want to do?
Well, so just because I wanted to do something, because I haven't shot anything since Tournament, mm-hmm. I shot a little Christmas short film, little fantasy over Valentine's weekend. So we're editing that right now. It's little special, low budget short. We're just going to put it online, just something fun. To share with, you know, I think our followers would enjoy this as well. Mm-hmm. And then I'm, you know, Mike and I are working on the Tournament 2 concept, which we've been knocking around for about a year. And I just literally need to sit down and start writing it. We've just been writing notes and ideas mm-hmm. and talking about new characters and the environment that they would be in. We keep going back and forth with that. And then... a couple game shops that we've had a lot of support from across the country have really, you know, asked us to consider filming in their game shop.
Wow, cool.
And so we're thinking about, you know, maybe doing a short limited like web series that, you know, if it took off, maybe it would go, you know, we could get picked up by a in a studio or something, perhaps, I don't know, but I don't think it would be, it, but it wouldn't be the style, exact style of tournament. It's, the concept's different, but it's definitely the same world. But yeah, so that's kind of what we're doing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking this would be a good, like, series, like TV series, not like web series, whatever. Like, I like this would be like a cool thing to watch on Hulu for 10 episodes every 8 months, you know. Just because it's fun, and you could make it a little more expansive and see more, like Aaron goes back to school, and then, you know, Paul's like, well, what do I do now? And then that's where you get the whole Cobra Kai version of Tournament where Aaron's the bad guy. But no, I think that's really cool. So when it comes to like your process for writing like a sequel to something that you truly loved, like, are you walking around with like post-it notes and like sticking them everywhere? Do you have a notebook? You know, are you putting it all digitally so that you don't make sure you don't lose anything?
So I'm not quite as organized as you are thinking that I might be. So I have like a couple different notebooks that I've been writing things in. And then writing out some new characters and some scenarios, and I don't know. Well, I guess you wouldn't know. But we've been traveling up until October, pretty much from right when we finished the film till about October. About every couple months or so, we were going to a convention somewhere in the country. Promoting the film. So sometimes we had a film festival, or we did just a handful of gather screenings and so game shop screenings. And then again, like the Star City Games events, we'd have a booth. So we were on the road a lot over like the course of, 2 years.
Okay.
And so there wasn't a lot of, to me, like, good healthy writing time, but so it's been sporadic, but we've definitely had a lot of time in the vehicle, in our car, talking extensively about what we want to do. And that's kind of how Tournament started, is just us talking a lot about everything until we just started writing.
Very cool.
So yeah,
well, now you have nothing but time to write because you can't go do anything else.
Yeah, you know, it's like that pressure now of like, oh, so I better come up with something brilliant now that, you know, I should have no excuse for distractions. But right now I'm focused on finishing the short film. Mm-hmm. It's called Believe.
Believe.
It's about a guy. Cool. Yeah, he doesn't believe in Santa Claus.
And
then Santa Claus is not very happy about it. So, so it's just a fun little short.
That sounds like fun. Yeah. I keep saying I'm gonna watch a movie and I'm gonna do a podcast about that movie like right after watching it, and like post something every day for people. And yeah, I haven't done any of that, so I get it. Well, cool. All right, so where can people find the movie online? Besides, I mean, it's on Amazon Prime, but is it streaming anywhere else? I couldn't find it on iTunes to buy. But where can they find the movie?
So originally, we've had a Blu-ray you can get from order from us, or you can see us at gaming conventions. And it was for purchase or rent on Amazon. And it literally just this past week, I think right when we reached out to you, just released it for Amazon Prime.
Oh, awesome.
And it's also on Vimeo.
Okay.
So you can rent it on Vimeo, rent or buy it on Vimeo. And that's where... because I guess Amazon is only UK, US right now. Mm-hmm. And so anywhere else in the world, if you have a computer, that's how you can watch it on Vimeo. And we've had people from Europe watch it. And it's pretty cool. They're saying, oh, it's just like my game shop. And you're like, really? Just outside the US? We've had people from Australia too watch it. Like, this is great. This is hilarious. So, we hope to get it out there on more platforms. But we were going to wait until the summer, but we thought this would be a great time right now while people are looking for stuff to watch and not necessarily want any, a good comedy. This is a perfect time for a good comedy. So.
Absolutely. Like I told you, I watched it 3 times. Like the first time I watched it, like completely undivided attention. And then the second time I watched it while I was working, and I'm a designer. And so like I was working, it was great. It was just the perfect kind of like, it's not like white noise isn't the right word, but like the right kind of like inspiration, like, oh, hey, wait, something fun is going to happen. Okay. I figured something out in my head. Let's get back to this. And then the second time I watched it, or the third time I watched it, like just undivided attention. So,
thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's great. I definitely like, I think it's exciting. Like, that Amazon does that. And yeah, Vimeo is a great platform. Like, it's kind of unfortunate that YouTube won that war. But yeah, and then where else can they find you online?
Just our website, tournamentmovie.com, and then you can find us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
Okay. Cool. And yeah. You said there was a behind the scenes video on your website. What's your website?
It's tournamentmovie.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Thank
awesome.
You so much.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have anything else you guys want to add before we go?
Just please sign up for our newsletter, because when we do release new content, you would be the first to know.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, thank you guys for coming so much. This was great. I thank you for reaching out to me on Instagram. I did truly, truly enjoy the movie very much.
Thank you.
And like, I'm definitely down for Tournament 2 when that comes out. And when it comes out, you got to come back and promote it. For sure. So
we will give priority to everybody who gave us a shot before everybody knew who we were. That's for sure.
That sounds good. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. And guys, go check out Tournament. It's on Amazon right now. For our contingent in Poland, check out Vimeo. You can rent and buy it there. So, all right. Again, thank you guys for coming. I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right. So thanks to Mike and Patricia for coming on and talking about Tournament and making indie films and, you know, what it's like to be indie filmmakers right now. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it. That was great. Make sure you go check out the movie. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a lot of fun. It's really good. If you're a nerd, a geek, whatever, collector, tabletop gamer, desktop gamer, console gamer, it's just a lot of fun. And you're going to see some of yourself and some of your friends in it. And yeah. All right. So you guys know you can find us online at infamouspodcast.com. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio now, Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, you know, pretty much anywhere there's a podcast. Whatever your favorite podcasting app is, we're on there. If we're not, let me know and I'll get on there. Yeah, and on social, like I said, it's Infamous Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have new episodes every Sunday. If you like our music, check out meetmichaelhenry.com. Michael Henry is a great little composer, and well, he's not so little, but he's a great composer, and he put our music together for us. And it's awesome. New episodes every Sunday. If you like what you hear and you are an Apple Podcast listener, go please give us a 5-star review and let us know how much you like the show. If you're not, that's fine too. Just keep listening. And if you really want to help the show, go find a friend, ask to look at their phone, pull up their Spotify, look up Infamous Podcast, and subscribe and set their notifications so that they get notified when we have new episodes, and maybe they'll start to listen and like it as much as you do. Anyway, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and I'll be back to talk to you soon. Later.